Hi, my name is Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3 Pi Squared ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3 Pi Squared has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, welcome to ABA Business Leaders, brought to you by 3 Pi Squared. I'm April, and this is Steven.
Howdy.
How are you guys doing today? Today, we are going to talk about accreditation is coming. We're seeing it both from regulatory boards and payers. So we're going to talk about what that means for ABA companies.
Okay.
Yeah. So what do you think it means?
What do I think it means? I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts. I like the idea of a third party coming into a company and making sure things are being done properly. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I guess my biggest concern is, and we can talk about this more, but my biggest concern is for smaller practices, are they going to, is this just like a tax or a pay-to-play thing, right? Mm-hmm. I assume the idea behind the accreditation or requiring an accreditation is because there are, being honest, lots of bad ABA practices out there not doing the right thing. Whether they mean to or not doesn't really matter. So I assume accreditation is to mitigate that in some way.
That's what I was going to ask, is what is accreditation and how does it change the day-to-day practice?
Yeah, accreditation can really change your practice.
Well, what is it first?
Yeah, sure. So it's a bunch of standards that you are required to follow a certain way. In ABA specifically, like a big part of accreditation is going to be your client processes. So how do you handle referrals? What do you do? Like, how quickly will you respond to client complaints? How do you discharge? How do you utilize staff? There's a lot to it. And even one accreditation I know for sure requires having a mission statement, of values, It's a value statement. These are things that I think are great to have, but it's great to come up on your own with, right? And so I guess my concern is, if it's required, then it's required.
So what you're saying is that you feel like it's great to have standards and something to put the bar at,
yeah,
of how, like, we could provide quality services across the board, standardize, mm-hmm, it a bit. And maybe even through that, defining what that means, mm-hmm, what quality would mean in all of those different ways.
Right. Totally.
However, if it's all in the intention behind it, like if someone is just telling you have to do it, so you do it to check off the boxes, mm-hmm, and then you set it aside, then how is that helpful? But if you go into it really with the intention behind, hey, I get the value in this, and I get, mm-hmm, how this could really be helpful and where this is going, so we're going to do these things and we're going to practice it day to day. So you're saying that just because you're accredited get that accreditation, it's not measuring if you're,
yeah,
checking the boxes, guess, like, or working out of intention?
Yeah, I guess my thing is, okay, because this would be forced, right? This would be a requirement to do, right? Mm-hmm. We have one funder right now in Massachusetts that is starting this. So in 2017, all ABA clinics need to be accredited. And then in 2018... all ABA providers in home or clinic need to be accredited. So this will be, or you don't get to use that funder, right? Mm-hmm. In essence, if you want to maintain your contract, you are required to do this. So you are required to come up with your values. So I don't know how effective, that's my biggest concern. I don't know how effective this will be. Like, you worked with one customer and his response was very similar to what I say. I just thought a mission statement was something you put on the wall because everybody's supposed to have a mission statement. Mm-hmm.
Just and then, check the box.
Yeah, it's a check the box. And so now I'm realizing the value. If your funding source requires you to come up with a mission statement, I'm not sure how many people will say, oh, I get why a mission statement is so valuable now. They're going to say, I'm going to do a mission statement because I have to, because my funder requires an accreditation, which requires a mission statement. And so if the sole intention or the main reason behind getting accredited is to get accredited,
I get that.
Then is this going to have the intent that I assume is behind the accreditation process?
I get that. And I could see the other side of it too, of maybe you don't think about putting values within your company. And so if you have within the accreditation that says to do that, then you start looking into it and then you're like, oh wow, this is a good idea. And you could see the benefit from that and maybe look into how you can get someone to help you with values, or how you start reading books or whatever and you figure out how to make that happen.
Right.
I get that's a Pollyanna view, because I also know that when you're in this, I don't know for certain, but it's highly likely that when you're in the process of this, you got to get it done quick because you're hitting a deadline, right? If all of a sudden the payer says, oh, you need to do this. And it's not completely mainstream yet. So there's a lot of businesses out there who don't have the standard, aren't following like an accreditation.
Totally.
Or maybe they're striving for it. They're not there yet. So I get that we were just talking about values. There's very one small thing of a lot of things. But yes, I can understand that it could be just like a check the box and set it aside.
Yeah, I mean,
but it could also be a tool to really help improve quality, could it not?
Sure, it can be. Look, so my experience is like doing this on an engineering side of things, right? We had to comply with certain regulations because our vendors required certain rules be followed. And so because they wouldn't get paid if they didn't meet a certain standard,
right?
So I totally get that. And so we dealt with aerospace and automotive, and there's TS and NADCAP, and these are these are things that you can get through third party, you can get accredited. And so this is a good thing. But the issue that I saw was, okay, we do the audit on Tuesday, mm-hmm. and then on Wednesday, we do the things that we do to get by, right? And if the intention behind getting accredited is so that you can keep getting paid, then I'm not sure. I don't see how that is going to be as effective as people think it is. To me, it sounds more like, okay, you want to play the game, you got to pay the tax, right? And so it makes some third-party organization a lot of money, but I'm not sure. There needs to be data on this, right? That rise, quality of outcome.
That I think that's like the million-dollar question, right? Because
what are these accreditations? What are they going to do if they get a complaint against one of their providers, big box provider, and they're doing something unethical or they're not following the policies that are required of them to follow? Are they going to have some teeth behind this, or is it just going to be, you know what, if you can do that, that'd be great.
So you're talking about some kind of follow through. What happens if, you know, you just check off these boxes, you get your accreditation, and then what?
Yeah.
And you're not following these things, and then you're not getting follow through.
Yeah,
what happens then?
Like, I think that, I mean, look at respite care. Look at hospitals. They all need to follow accreditation. They have standards, right? Mm-hmm. And so, do you, like, what happened during the opioid epidemic. Like, these people have accreditations, they have ethical, they've got a board of medicine, all of these things. And still, there were some really bad actors out there. I don't see anybody going to jail, right? Or very few people, right? So what did it do?
Yeah.
Was it just another layer of bureaucracy, or was it helpful, and did it prevent something from occurring? And so that's my concern, is that if we're just doing stuff for the sake of doing stuff, then it's no different than, okay, like, it take look at session notes. So we session notes before fund, like, insurance got involved. Session notes were very important. They gave information to the BCBA to so that the case could progress.
That they're a communication tool.
They're, yes.
You weren't necessarily censored on how you could communicate, but correct. You could communicate to those people in your team in the way that worked for the team.
Correct. Right? And so it wasn't like, oh, you can't say this and you can't say that. There was an intention behind it. It was seen as valuable. And now it's valuable because I don't get paid unless I do it. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, it shouldn't be that way. Right? Everybody says, oh, session notes are so important. No, they're not. The only reason that they're important is because if I don't have a good session note, I will get recouped. That's where we're at.
But we're also bringing it back around, or trying to bring it back right. around, of what is the true importance of session notes and how can they be a tool for you to
sure.
really use it. And same thing with this, I guess. Like, same thing for accreditation.
Exactly.
So, and I like to think of the positive side of things, like, you're in it because you want to do good.
Yeah, but you're right? not doing
and
it.
And I understand. Let me finish. And so let's err on that. Let's say that, okay, you get, oh yeah, accreditation is going to, on some level, raise the percentage of quality, right? Mm-hmm. We're not black and white here. It's not going to, all of a sudden, everything's going to be perfect. Quality services, amazing, just because they're standards. I think accreditation, and I think everybody could say that. But let's say that your businesses are going into this and they're really putting their effort in, they have intention behind,
mm-hmm.
they're like, yes, I see the value in this accreditation. I want to be part of this. I want to go ahead and jump on it now before I have to.
Yeah.
So in that scenario,
mm-hmm.
there's still a lot of barriers. And I would like to, I'm going to make an overgeneralization here. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of that scenario I've just explained are a lot of our customers
correct.
And they're typically small business owners or single owned, like BCBAs running it. That's a different group of people, right? Because typically they don't have the resources that like a big box company may have. What kind of barriers do you feel like the accreditation process could put in the way of people who are really doing good and they see the good in what accreditation can
do? Yeah, accreditation, typically what I've seen from the more popular ABA accreditations. Now, I just want to back that up for a second and then I'll answer your question. But something that I'm very curious about is, would a funder accept ISO? So ISO already has a medical mm-hmm. standard. And it's been built out. It's effective. People use it all over the world.
What does ISO stand for?
International Standard Organization, I think is what it's
so
called.
It's just like, it's an accreditation.
Yeah. ISO, like this whole...
Through other, for other,
what
like...
What is built for medical, aerospace, automotive. This is a standard. They even have a standard for the standard, right? Mm-hmm. This is really comprehensive. And it's like... It's used worldwide, right? This is like very effective. It's already out there. Why can't I use that standard? Why are you requiring me a certain standard? That's my biggest issue with it, is if you're forcing someone and there's one person that you can take it from. That doesn't sound right
or
to me.
Or a couple to choose from.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. But again...
But is that because we're a new field, though?
Sure, but if one is 10,000 and one is 2,000, is there really two or is there one? Like, of course there's one, right? And so if the pricing isn't competitive, especially for smaller organizations. And I'm not saying that these are the pricing. I don't know the pricing. I honestly have no idea. But I'm just saying if one is like super expensive and out of reach, then there is only one. And it may be a better stand. I don't know. But that's the I don't know. So that's one thing that I would like cleared up, particularly with this one funder in Massachusetts that's doing this now. I have not reached out yet, but this is something that I would like to who determines that this is a standard that...
So like what accreditation body are they approving?
Yeah. If you get it accredited, you should be accredited. And I don't know. That's just my opinion. So we'll see how this plays out.
So one barrier could be financial.
It's probably
the biggest.
Financial is obviously, it's a huge impact. Now, it's also just time.
Yeah.
It's the amount of time and work that this takes. And then the maintenance. You know, again, the issue that you have, the vast majority of companies has, that I have seen during auditing, it is, you'll do like this, like marathon, get the policies in place, we get everything set up, everything's great, wonderful, now we can set it down, and then we're done, right? No, this is the hardest part. It's the maintenance of this thing. It's the, does my policy and my behavior match? And if they don't, do I change the policy or do I change the behavior? And so that is what happens to the vast majority of companies 6 months in. These things used to work and now they don't anymore. They pass the audit, great. And then when they have to come up with their 2-year renewal, okay, now we fix our policies. And so these policies were effective again for 2-3 months. So this is the biggest barrier and cost involved is having, you have to almost have something, depending on the size of your company, but this is going to be a job, right? This is, you know, my recommendation on this is that this is a new higher RBT, new higher BCBA job. They come in, they look at the policies. Oh, wait, I'm being told to do something different than this. Okay, you're going to change the policy, right? We're gonna discuss, okay, which is the right way to do it? Is it the new way that we're actually doing it, or is it the old way in the handbook? And then there is a decision made by someone, and then that policy is updated.
So you're saying, like, having someone new in the company, like BCBA or tech,
that's how we did it, yeah.
And will come in and say, okay, you give me feedback on this?
Well, it was like...
Because it's like fresh eyes, and so
yeah,
they're able to...
Yeah. So like when I had a real job, that's what we would do with new hires is you break it. Their job is to break the procedure, right? If they can break it, then it doesn't work. Like we would be told, I don't know how many times I've heard this, right? You have to be able to take a policy doesn't work unless you can take somebody off the street and get them to do it. But new hires are excellent for breaking things, right? Oh, I didn't know that. I had no idea. There's so many unwritten rules in companies that you don't even know about, right? New hires are great for this because they're unfamiliar with the policies. They don't know. They don't know all the unwritten rules, that, right? And this way, you can see how effective your policies are. Based on the behaviors, do they match what we actually do, or is it completely wrong, right? And now there's always going to be those issues, right? Especially when you're working with individuals. So how you handle something with one family is obviously going to be way different. So there's going to be nuance, and you can't capture all of that in a policy, right? Because it's going to forever go on, right? Oh, in case of 100-1-2-3-4-5-6A, you have to do this. So there's going to obviously need to be some flexibility inside of your policies. But can my company, when we talk to people about bringing values in, to get that buy-in, right? Because a lot of people will say, why do I need values and mission statement? This is pointless, right? If you want a lasting impact on your company, so when you do go on vacation or you take some time off, because I'm going to be generalizing here, but like most BCBAs are female, right? And most are in age where they may have a child, right? So they leave for a certain amount of time because they want to take care of their baby. and then they come back. I don't know how many times I've heard this. I don't recognize the company that I came back to. And so if you want that lasting impact on your company, values are a great way to do that, because you embed your values within everything that you do. I love auditing. I think it's really important. But if the only reason you're following the speed limit is so you don't get a fine, then any opportunity you get to speed, you will do, right? And that's the issue. And you may even be speeding just to speed, just because you want to be defiant. Like, how dare you make me do that, right? So this is the issue that I'm concerned about with forcing an accreditation on a field that already has a Board of Medicine license in the vast majority of the states, so we'll be talking about it later, and they have an ethic that they absolutely need to follow. So what does this provide more than what those do?
Yeah.
And then the other issue that I'm concerned about, right, and, you know, even with our handbooks, it's really important that people take these handbooks and then make them their own, right? Because my concern is, okay, what do I need for values? Well, they accept these values, right? Here are your five options. What if you have different values, right? And my concern is that, okay, this is what you do because you're supposed to do it. That's another issue that you sometimes get with accreditation. Why do we do it this way? Well, we have to do it. You do it this way because you're supposed to do it this way, right? And that can reduce innovation, right? It can reduce an improved quality. No, we can't do it that way because we have to follow this standard, right? And I am not saying that either of the more popular ABA-specific accreditations do that, but that is a concern, right? If you get someone in there that doesn't really understand the intention behind that piece of the accreditation, and they just say, no, this is the only way you can do it, right? And you can't tell me that doesn't happen, because it happens in every organization. You get rigid, and we do it this way because we do it this way. And my concern would be that this would cause a lack of innovation. So that's my concern.
It's here.
It's here. Coming.
And so for those business owners in my story that are really trying and they want to do good and they see this as an opportunity to improve, to learn, yet it's super overwhelming.
Yeah. And go ahead. Can I just say one more thing and then I'll stop interrupting? I won't stop interrupting you. So my question for these accreditations, and I would urge you to ask anybody that you decide to get accredited with, how does this prevent on ethical services? How will this stop on? Because I have to assume that the accreditation process is to change services by making higher quality, right? There's more accountability. There's more oversight. Mm-hmm. So that's my question. Where's the data on that?
And I mean, we've talked to other people who are in the health field in general, not just outside of ABA. Mm-hmm. And from the little bit that I've learned about that is that's medical field and psychology and all of the other medical and mental health fields as they've come along, right? This is part of that process of growing.
Yes.
And as we are in ABA field, as we're, I don't know, some say that we're like coming into our adolescence, mm-hmm, as a field, and now we need some more rules and regulations and governing for that. And there's a place for that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I think you already mentioned, like with ISO and with other medical standards, like how does this compare and how, like what, I mean, there might be data within that we could look at.
Sure. Yeah. And I get like, again, I
get our field's different, but
it's not.
And it still follows a lot of the same, yeah, trends and pathways that, correct, previous.
Right. So in this sense, it isn't. And so all I'm saying is that my concern about this accreditation process is forcing people to do it on a mass scale, because that's what it is. I'm not sure how effective that it will be. Right. I don't know how much buy-in you're actually getting. And are you actually creating the opposite of what your intention is. If people are just doing it to do it, then I'm not sure that... Now, if someone comes, which again, most of our customers that do, I don't know what I don't know, and I just want to do everything right. That is the vast majority of who we work with. I think that's everyone that we work with, which is great, right? How this is how we help, right? With these standardized processes, because you have to have standard processes and procedures in place. You have to be able to scale your business effectively, to make it an ethical, sustainable, scalable practice. You have to have policies and procedures in place. But where I come at it from is, do you want this thing to work when you're gone? Do you want these employees and clients to get the same services and support that they would get even when you're not there? Then that's the reason why you would do this. And then there is also that financial aspect of it, but first it's this and then it's that. Do you know what I mean? And so I think that when you're volunteering that, you're going to get more buy-in and it's going to be more effective. But if you, again, my concern is that in a field that is already struggling with low reimbursement rates, to add on another essentially tax to smaller providers, is this going to then take some of these people out? Or they're just going to say, look, while I know this is a dwindling number of funders, I'm only going to work with funders that don't require an accreditation because right now I can't afford accreditation. Hell, I may even take the standards and follow them to the T, but I'm not going to get accredited because I can't financially afford it. So I'm just going to work with the limited number of funders that still allow me to do that. And then that, again, this sounds like a way to... Sounds like a way to limit services to me that I would like to know the intention behind it, right? The actual intention. I'm a little cynical about this. And at the same time, this is our company, right? Is providing those standards, right? When you get our handbooks, these are things that every ABA company should have in place, right? Like a quality policy and a continuous improvement policy, right? So when you get those client complaints or you get those low employee satisfaction surveys or there is an accident at work, you know how to handle it, right? You know what to do and how do we mitigate this risk. So these are really important things to have in place.
And a lot of our policies and procedures that we have in place are...
Because it's happened.
It's happened.
Yes.
Like I think we've talked about this before, but our handbook started off so small and in comparison, right? Mm-hmm. And then as things came up, we're like, oh, I guess we're going to have to write a plan for that again, right. I guess. And then now that you work with so many agencies across the country, it's the input that we get from other companies too of right. This thing that happened and we need a policy right. for it. So there is that. But there's a place for, okay, preventative, right? So mm-hmm. here are the policies and procedures in place so that we have preventative measures to hopefully reduce the likelihood of something happening. And then you have the things that you have in there just to cover yourself, just in case this random, bizarre issue happened. And then, but that's like that intention of let's use this as a real working document, a real tool, right? And so, but right, if you just buy a handbook and you don't personalize it and you don't update your own, put your own into it, it's not really a tool. But the good news is, like with our handbooks, we do have those updates.
Yes.
And we offer those updates so that could, if nothing else, prompt to...
For free, yes, you get free updates.
Yeah. You prompt to go through and do some updates, right? Yeah. But so let's say a business right now is saying, okay, all right, I see this accreditation's coming. I should start getting prepared. Like, how would they, let's say, accreditation proof their business so that and they're not scrambling last minute just to check the boxes just to get this done, but they can make that decision on their own mm-hmm. of this, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to follow the path that things are going. Just similar to AI, right? Like, we, okay, AI is here. We can't fight it anymore. We're going to figure out how to use it safely. Similar with accreditation standards, right? Okay, mm-hmm. they're here. So how can I take the ball back and be in control of this process to start getting ready for this so that no matter what accreditation that we need to get, we're at least super close to getting that sure. because that's how we're already running our company.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can Google, right? But look for ABA accreditations. I believe there are two out there right now. So that would be the first step, is gaining some knowledge on these accreditations. I believe both of them allow you to download their standards for free. So that would be step number one. Now, and I get that if for me at least, it feels a little sleazy or, I don't know, it feels icky to me that I am at the same time dogging accreditation and now I'm going to go into this. Hey, our handbooks, we're building them out so that they do pass both of these accreditation processes, right? I'm well aware that this is coming and there's nothing that I can do to prevent this from happening. And at the same time as I am very critical of this, I am also totally on board with it at the exact same time.
You're on board with, like, when we go through all of the different accreditation, like all the pieces that you need to have, like the standards in mm-hmm. there, they're all there for a reason. And for the most part,
I mean,
you can understand like why they're there. Sure. And if a company truly is doing all these things, then heck, they're going to be pretty freaking amazing.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's probably accurate.
Yours is more the intention behind it and the fact that there's more limited choices and that there are a lot of barriers as this new thing comes into play.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit more cynical now than I ever. Maybe I'm just getting old and get off my yard, right? I'm getting old. But I'm just a little bit less, I don't know, maybe it's a little less naive. And my concern, again, is that forcing already ethical ABA practices because they do things ethical because they are ethical. How does that make them more ethical, right? And that's my only thing, right? And how does it make maybe ABA companies that are less ethical or have less quality than we would like become more ethical or have a higher quality? And maybe it does that. Maybe it does. I don't know. I have to see more data, but that's my only issue. So I have lots of issues, so that's not my only issue. So yeah, so as far as how do you get through these accreditation processes, because they are overwhelming. HIPAA itself, which is something completely different, is overwhelming. This is a lot of paperwork. It's gonna take some time to get through. Even once you have all of your policies and procedures that you believe meet the standard, you also have to provide the evidence of that you are following these procedures. You say you respond to clients within X amount of hours or X business days, prove it to me, right? So you have to give that evidence that, okay, we got this email or we got this client intake form or we got this new client application or whatever you call it. On this date, and we responded on this date, right? So there has to be evidence that you have done these things. You say you have a fire and evacuation policy. Prove it, right? Do you actually train your staff on this? You say that you collect resumes and you check references. Prove it to me. So there is that piece of it as well. So getting those policies together and then actually following those policies is important. And that's where I go back to, does the policy match your behavior? Or because if it doesn't, then we need to change something. Either the behavior needs to change to match the policy or the policy needs to change to match the behavior. So that's what our handbooks are for, is to get through these. If you say, I don't know what I don't know a lot, and if you say, I just want to do everything right, I want to make sure I'm following everything that I'm supposed to, then our handbooks were built for you. These things are super comprehensive. We work with 1,000 ABA practices. We're constantly getting feedback from people saying, hey, can you add this? Or what do you do in this situation? And then we take that feedback and then we distribute it to everyone for free. So that's why we do what we do, right? Because we want to affordably give you documents. I don't know of anybody else that says, hey, you spend $400 and you will have a client handbook for the rest of your 20-30 year practice, right? Since we started these 8 years ago now, people that bought these back in 2017, I think that I'm doing the math right, are still getting free updates, right? This will follow you, right? It goes through clinic and in-home. You know, if you do decide, we get a lot of people that start in-home. Why? Because it's more affordable, right? You don't need as much upfront cash. You start in-home and then a lot of people were like, okay, I want to start a clinic now. Great. Those handbooks will work for the clinic too. If you're like, okay, I'm starting off in Texas, but maybe I want to move, you know, I have an opportunity in New Mexico now. Great. Those handbooks work in both. They work in all states. They pass Optum, Kaiser, Magellan, Medicaid audits. We've been through accreditation processes, and that's why we're updating them right now. So we hope to send out at least part of the update. It was a lot of policies that we had to modify and add to this. And then there was some customer feedback, like our financial responsibility agreement, actually stating, okay, this is what copay is, this is what coinsurance is, this is what your out-of-pocket max means, to educate your clients so that they have something to go back to. It's really important, especially if you're working out-of-network with funders for the No Surprises Act. These are good to do things anyway. So we're adding that. I don't know. I don't know if I got off track there, but that's what we built these things for. So you can voluntarily buy these things and then you can implement these practices that literally over 1,000 ABA practices have taken and then made their own, right? We work with companies that have speech, they have OT, they have respite, they have family therapy. They've taken these handbooks and then modified them to meet their own unique company. Yeah, that's we're hoping that this is a affordable way that you can maintain your accreditation. It's not, again, the easiest part of this whole thing is going to be doing it the first time. The most difficult part, everyone that I've ever worked with, and this isn't just ABA, this is just the way it is, this human nature, is maintaining those things, like you said, right? And this is a prompt. Like, you should do this at least yearly. Even if your accreditation is only once a year, once every 2 years, or maybe even less than that, your funder only requires you do an in-network audit, and they never look at it again. These are the things that will keep you in compliance as regulations change, as funder requirements change, as accreditation changes. So that's a sales pitch that I will give you for the handbooks. I do think accreditation is important, and I see a lot of value in accreditation. But like, I look at it like our child, right? When we have these line in the sand rules, how effective is that? Or is it more important to say, hey, this is why we're doing it this way. This is why we need your support in this situation, right? And I get a 9-year-old, you can only do that to a certain amount, right? But that is way more effective when we're talking through it, where we're getting his side of it, why he did the things he did, and why we need him to do things a little bit differently, versus you're going to do it this way because I say you have to do it this way. Like, no one likes that, right? And so you're going to get a higher response rate when people are voluntarily doing it and they know why they're doing it, because it is the right thing to do, right? That's all.
And like you said, there's accreditation, there's a place for it. And so, but it is a big process. So yeah. We're here to help.
We actually are, as we update these things, we do have a group of an accreditation group. I can share that link too. If anyone wants to join that, we have opened that up. So as you're going through the accreditation process, if you have purchased our handbooks, well, if there's like weird things that, oh, wait a second, because we've never been through this newest accreditation process. I believe that our customers have, but not personally. So if you are going through this and you want that real-time support to get you through it, I did take the ACQ accreditation training, so I do have some understanding of it, so I can support you through that. It would be wonderful to go through that and support you through that as well. It does require that you get our handbooks. So that's just something else to be aware of. If you feel like joining that group, sign up for a free consult, email us info@3pisquared.com, and we'll get back to you.
So I think that's good for today. That's a lot of talk about accreditation and standards, and hopefully it's enough to get you thinking and thinking about the why and the intention behind it for you and your particular company, and evaluate where you are in the process and where you would like to be, and reach out. We'd love to help you.
I would really appreciate any feedback, comments, questions that you have on our discussion here. I think it's really important that we're all just talking to each other. That's how we'll get through this and make it a better services, higher quality services. It's lonely out there, and take this, I don't know, this feels very stressful and overwhelming to me. So I have to assume that you all are feeling that same thing. So rather than put your head in the sand and then, like, with 2 weeks left, say, okay, fine, I'll do it. We've got, what, a year, 2 years? So we can plan this out and do it as best as possible and actually use it. So we can use it to benefit our company, to benefit our clients, to benefit our staff. So anyway, yeah, that's it.
Well said.
Okay.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquared.com.